Hello, welcome to the Alps Team episode 25, quarter of a century.
Woo!
I think champagne is in order. We've made it this far. 25 episodes of the sometimes weekly, occasionally with four technical evangelists here at Microsoft, focused on all things IT operations and DevOps, on-prem and Azure technology,
open source and DevOps,
and DevOps and more DevOps.
Yeah, and we've got the ghost mode going today, as we can see, seeing as we've got our GoPros back-to-back in their little tripod concoction that we've built. And
it's the only effect we have.
Yeah, and we each have 5 minutes as part of the show to go through our respective areas. So as we said, DevOps and open source, DevOps, on-prem and Azure. So I get five and five while we're still hiring for somebody who to fill that seat over there. Update on the construction. Things are getting more and more finished, actually. And what you can see is this wall is a good reflection of the overall standings of the building. Things have moved on nicely. We've gone from plaster. We've gone from power box to plaster to now a painted and textured wall. So this room, at least, is looking pretty finished. Not that there was much going on anyway, but yeah, still more work to do out there. Anyway, who's going to go first? We're going to spin our old friend, the banana. Not the same banana. That one would certainly be rotten by now, but I did eat it after our last usage of it. So we're going to spin, and this end...
Good to know.
Good to know, yeah. Details are priceless.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people want to know that I'm eating healthily.
Yeah, you have questions, right?
It was really sweet and sugary, yeah. So this end will be...
I'm sure viewership is going to skyrocket.
Honky stick right there. Right, here we go. I think that was coming round to you.
Yeah.
There we go.
What?
Well, it was this end pointing, and then there it is.
Okay.
Hey, who makes up the rules?
Why do we even need to spin the banana? It's just going to be me anyway.
It went that way, so it's you.
Okay.
Right, okay, yeah, so you'll go. Let me give you 5 minutes up for DevOps stuff. Are you ready to go?
All right.
Here we go. Hang on. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hang on. There we go.
All right. Well, first up, I just discovered a new session from the .NET Conf, which is pretty interesting. It is around deploying ASP.NET Core application using Docker containers.
I've heard of those.
So, yeah, it's Docker. It's kind of a thing. I mean...
Container, like shipping containers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's like a big whale or something like that.
Yeah.
You just, blue-ish. You know, it's can ship things, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so that's the first one. So you might want to check that out. You know, obviously, if you don't know much about containers, then, you know, your containers channel is good to get you going with
it's
space.
It's an excellent resource. Excellent. I'll talk more about that later.
Cross-promotion like that.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Teamwork.
Couple more hits there.
Teamwork. All right. So... the next item I have is around feature flags. All right, what's that and why do I care?
Mm.
Well, you as a operations professional care about feature flags because guess what? That makes you not have as much headaches when you are trying to deploy things because guess what? With feature flags, you could just say, I'm going to turn that little piece off or I only want to launch things to, let's just say, people in Washington State. Or Oregon, right?
Uh-huh.
And then that way, you've got a lot of control over your deployment. So none of this, like, you know, 3 a.m. rollouts. It's like, let me flip that switch off because that thing is breaking stuff. And then that way, I can go, you know, have a good night's rest.
So can you walk us through an example? Because I'm not as familiar with the feature flags.
Yeah, so it is going to require, in every instance I've really seen, feature flags is going to require coding instrumentation. Usually the developer is going to need to instrument an SDK or something like that. However, it does impact things when it gets into deployment. So when it comes to deployment time, you now have a much more fine-grained lever of that new feature, perhaps, you want to roll out to people, right? I've even seen some people use feature flags as a self-selecting tool, like within the app itself. They want to go to the beta site or they want to, within the mobile app, they may have a little toggle that says, enable this new thing,
right?
And then that way you get to get early feedback or feedback in from real users without having the risk of going 100% into all of your people.
Okay, right? So a dev builds an app, could be mobile, could be whatever, and it's got these feature flags in that when dev or ops deploys this app, they can choose, I want to deploy version 2.0 with 7 of the 8 features turned on.
So, yeah, right, exactly. Okay. And then in production, you can literally deploy a feature, right? Or turn off a feature to to all your, you know, users out there, which subset of users, and in that way you have a much more fine-grained control for release of whatever those things are that you're pushing out there.
So nice.
Can we count, for example, the insider previews as kind of feature flex?
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, that's probably a good sample Mintel wrap around how things work. People kind of self-selecting into things, but for Windows, it's a pretty big thing, right? It's all of Windows, right? So better maybe like if you took that Windows Insider thing and you could say, well, I only want this chunk of subset of features from the Windows Insider.
Yeah, bash on then, Windows, for example.
Well, the Hyper-V role of Windows client. Then turn it on, turn it off.
That would probably be closer to what most people would do with feature flag implementation.
Right.
So there's a blog post on at least one partner that we have called LaunchDarkly. It just explains a little more about what feature flags are, as well as that company has a integration with VSTS for rollouts. For, you know, if you're using VSTS release management, you can use a task to, you know, light up or turn off those feature flags.
Nice.
So that's my next item, and ops people should now you know about feature flags. You've been informed. Next item I have is around a new plugin for Visual Studio Team Services with Jenkins. So what we find a lot of times, you know, at least Jenkins was originally designed for a continuous integration / build test tool, right? It was at least originally never really designed for release management. Things are changing, of course, with 2.0, but nonetheless, if you want to use Visual Studio Team Services, let's say for release management, which I have seen people do, then this plugin makes it really easy. Now, in the past, you've always been able to do this, but this is like an officially, you know, supported plugin that Microsoft helped to create. So makes it more streamlined for you to, you know, build or test in Jenkins and then push that to release management in Visual Studio Team Services.
Cool. Nice.
And then last and I would say least, I gotta say.
Not to say that it's not important. Yeah. You've basically said it's not important. Yeah.
Last and least.
Oh,
I didn't get time.
Let's see with that.
You
can still do it.
Two seconds.
Yeah, go on.
Team Services build tasks to easily extract files. Uses 7-zip done.
Cool. Wow. Play that back in slow motion on the Channel 9 Windows.
Click on the link.
Watch the video and press slow and you will actually understand.
Do you
understand.
Like to extract files in an automated fashion with your whatever? Then there you go. Now there's
so you can programmatically call 7-zip.
Yeah, like if you have, let's say, a zipped file checked into source code and then you want to do something with extracting that thing that's zipped up during the process of an automated thing, now there's a task that just helps you say, I'm going to extract that. That as a task.
Otherwise, you'd have to do that. Like you have to script that manually.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I know dev stuff. It's easy.
Yeah.
Right. It's easy stuff. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I'll tell you what. We'll not spin because I've got two things. You've got one. So I may as well do one of mine. Then you do yours. And then I'll do the last
one.
All right. So I'll do Azure first. So yes, that's your 5 minutes. Here we go. For 5 minutes on Azure stuff starting. Now, there we go. So there's not a huge amount of new news, but I have got three things that I want to talk about very briefly. The first one, nobody cares about DR and high availability for applications in Azure, right? It's just redundant. As soon as you put it in Azure, it's redundant.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just install.
I usually just do a single VM and I'm happy.
For the whole infrastructure. Single VM, AD, file server,
local disks,
exactly, no SSD, no geo replication.
As long as you have it a really big VM, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, I mean, just like a little one half quarter of a core, you know, that size is it. 128 meg of RAM. You're done. Fine. But there's a new post been published to the Azure blog all about disaster recovery and HA. For applications built on Azure. So not necessarily just for VMs, but architecting applications to take into account the need for disaster recovery in HA. So how do you build fault tolerance and into your application that you're deploying to Azure, whether it's in VMs, whether it's on PaaS platform, whatever it may be? How do you think about DR if something fails to bring it up in another location, whatever it may be? So when you look at this blog post, you'll see it's not just about the how and what you need to click, but more about what you need to think about when you're transitioning to the cloud and architecting applications. So high availability, what is availability? What are some of the kind of SLAs that Azure offers at the different services like compute, SQL database, storage, and more? How do you scale an application efficiently to take into account availability? So distributing it across regions, distributing it across more local locations. Fault tolerance, DR, all about recovery, RTO, RPO, recovery points, and a nice checklist. And this key blog post that I'll link to links off to the core resources as well that will help you start to plan more efficiently. So very useful documentation. Again, less of the this is how you do it, more about what you need to think about to successfully deploy in a redundant fashion on Azure.
Cool.
So yeah, loads of cool stuff there. Very, very important. The other thing that I wanted to touch on is a hat tip to Microsoft Mechanics. New video from Mr. Claus, Rick, I suppose he's still honorary member of the ops team. And he's been talking with Corey Sanders on a Microsoft Mechanics video that's just recently been published, all about the Red Hat solutions running on Azure. So I think we touched on FreeBSD the other week. We talked about FreeBSD being available on Azure. So you'll know if you've seen the show, there's loads of Linux images that you can use, both commercial and freely available on Azure. And Red Hat is one of the more enterprise used distributions of Linux. So it's on there, you can play with it, but the video really showcases how you spin it up, what options you've got, what images are available, how you support, how you troubleshoot, how you get access to Red Hat resources if you need them. So loads of useful stuff. Also, how you can take your on-premises apps and run them on top of Red Hat OpenShift infrastructure running on Azure. All that in under 12 minutes on the Microsoft Mechanics. So very, very useful condensed update for you on Red Hat on Azure. So they were the key things that I wanted to talk about with Azure. I've got a few more bits in my on-prem section, but yeah, it's just been a bit of quiet. It gets to that year-end time, and the year for Microsoft
year.
Yeah, comes to the end at the end of June. So yeah, things tend to slow down a little bit at that point. But yeah, there you go. They're the two things that I think you should know about, at least if you get a chance to look up. So that's my time. Moo.
Mm.
There you go. No cow. So do you want to go with your DevOps and OSS stuff?
Yes.
Okay, let me press play when you're ready. Are you good to go?
Okay, go.
Oh, here we go.
So I'll continue the Red Hat.
See?
No. Oh, there you go. Teamwork.
Yeah. Teamwork's made the dream work.
Work on this. So Red Hat had their conference called DevNation. And we announced, Microsoft had a session there.
Okay,
and we announced
one session.
No, a couple of sessions.
Oh, right, okay.
This is the most important.
Ah, oh, right. Not the least important.
Yeah.
First and least. Go on.
So we announced now .NET Core and ASP.NET Core has reached version 1.0. And it runs on Linux, Enterprise Linux, which is Red Hat Enterprise Linux RHEL.
Right.
And it's fully supported. That's the important part, because if you're an enterprise, you want to
have some support.
So that means you are now able to run .NET applications on Linux.
Nice.
So you may think like, okay, I'm an operations guy. This is the ops team. What's in it for me? Probably your developers and the project managers, you know, developer managers are going to come to you soon and ask, hey, we heard about this announcement and we have these .NET applications and we want to run them on Linux. So
you say, no, get it on Windows.
Yeah, exactly. So now you have the option to run them on Windows Server or Red Hat Linux.
In that order,
yeah.
We all love Windows Server.
Yeah, so you are defending your
protective of my Windows Server.
Embrace open source, man.
I am. I'm only kidding.
And also, the OpenShift is on Azure, just like you mentioned. And we have this Azure Resource Manager enabling you to simplify the deployment of OpenShift on Azure. So you can just, you know, run the templates and you have the OpenShift origin running on Azure. So
what is it? What is OpenShift if people don't know?
It's like Red Hat's container platform,
fundamentally.
It's like a PaaS platform as a service.
Right.
So you write your application, you put your application on top of OpenShift, and it magically works.
So it's a bit like a service fabric type.
Yeah, kind
of. In some
of.
Way.
Well,
we'll put it as a generic PaaS platform.
Yeah, it's a PaaS platform.
PaaS platform.
It's more like maybe Pivotal's Cloud Foundry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So would it work, not the OpenShift, but the .NET Core on Linux, would it work on CentOS, even though it might not be supported because it's Red Hat Enterprise, but they are the same.
Theoretically, yes.
Right.
But it has some dependence on the packages.
Right.
So, but if you have the exact packages installed in your VM, it doesn't really matter the flavor of the Linux.
Okay.
It's probably going to work, but you're not going to get any support from Microsoft.
No, but you can get support from OS. You can email.
Yeah, just ping me.
I can forward your email to Matt. No, I have rules for that. Yeah, go on.
And Mesosphere, we have this Azure Container Service. I'm talking about this again and again and again. And one of the flavors is Mesosphere on Azure Container Service. And I realized when you go to a submit a ticket site in Mesosphere's website, Azure Container Service is one of the products now. It's in the list. So you can officially get support from Mesosphere.
It must be real.
About their DCOS offering on Azure.
Nice.
So if you have any problems, come to us, come to them, come to me again.
Not in that order.
Who needs to contact the Azure team or the Mesos team when you've got
August? SLA, 4 minutes.
If you can find me on Twitter, why not?
Yeah, that's right. If you can follow the right guy,
And finally, not open source is about the DNS security appliances being available on Azure. So there's a blog post, I'm going to link this in Azure blog, and it's really interesting. The hackers, the authors of these malware applications like Configure and other stuff, actually, it turns out they're using DNS records to be used as locations for attacks, like something.yourcompany.com. So they infiltrate your DNS servers and use this addresses like, hey, David's computer has open ports, so go just try to, infect that one. And they're using DNS records, so I'm not going to say there's no way, but it's really hard to keep track of what's happening in your DNS servers if you don't have any, firewall or something like that.
Mm.
And, companies are using some internal stuff, on-premises stuff, but now in the Azure Marketplace, we have two offerings about this DNS security. The blog posts have links. One is F5. The other one, I'm not remembering the name, but F5 is more targeting the enterprises.
Mm.
The other company is more like for small businesses. So if you have any concerns about DNS security on Azure, you can use the DNS firewalls. Now we have two types of appliances.
Oh, nice. There you go. That's it. That's your news. 5 minutes. Nice work.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Cool. Sweet. Right. So I'll wrap up with some on-prem juicy gossip. So let me start my 5 minutes. There we go. So a few things to talk about on on-prem. Firstly, to the community, a hat tip to Carsten and the team at IT Solutions, who've put one of our MVPs, Carsten Rachval, who's put up a video, a recent interview that he recorded when he was in Redmond at a recent event. Meeting with Klaus Jorgensen, who's in our storage team, to talk about Storage Spaces Direct. So if you're interested in storage, you want to hear directly from Klaus on and see him whiteboarding some of the more advanced topics, such as the storage bus cache, multi-resilient volumes, which are new in 2016 and pretty complex. So certainly something to get your head around.
So what is Storage Spaces Direct?
Storage Spaces Direct. Are you just trying to consume my entire 4 minutes here? Because I've got all this stuff to talk about. Storage Spaces Direct.
In one sentence.
It's awesome. Storage Spaces. No, there wasn't a full stop. There was just a comma there. Storage Spaces Direct essentially takes local disk in each of the servers and aggregates it across multiple servers and combines it all together in one big pool. So if you had 4 disks per server, 4 servers, each server would see 16 disks. So it aggregates them across all 4 and essentially creates shared storage, resilient shared storage, high performance from no shared storage. So each server only has local disk. So it's pretty powerful. Again, that was a really long one sentence, but there you go. So watch the video, I should have said, actually. You'll learn a lot about storage spaces and some of the improvements in the new release. Linking with that, NanoServer is a good way to deploy Storage Spaces Direct. And if you're thinking, well, I haven't deployed NanoServer yet, I'm still a little bit confused about how I do it, what's the best way? Well, technical evangelist Mr. Ed Baker in the UK on his blog, he's walked through and how to deploy NanoServer, at least part one so far, just walking you through with screenshots on his blog how to actually deploy with the most recent Windows Server 2016 TP5 release build. So things have changed slightly throughout the course of the milestones, TP5 being the most recent. So yeah, check that out. It's very useful to get started, taking you from literally the download through to actually creating an image, deploying with PowerShell, and then off you go. You're ready to rock and you can start playing around with Nano. So very, very useful if you're looking for that more personal, less documentation-like guidance, you know, some caveats, some things that he's found when he's doing it as well. So it's nice to have that personal guide as well. Onto Azure Stack, which we all know and love, and it's going to change the world. It's phenomenal. But there are a lot of organizations out there that are still either using or at least evaluating WAP. If you're evaluating, you should probably be thinking about Azure Stack now. But the Azure Pack, which was available and still is available for Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2, if you're thinking, well, how do certain concepts in Azure Stack map to what I'm used to in Azure Pack, then there's a series of blog posts, of which the part 7 has just been published. And these parts go way back to February or January earlier this year. So they've really stretched it out. But the latest one is the incredibly long title of ARM concepts, so Azure Resource Manager concepts, can't even get the first two words right, in Azure Stack for the WAP administrator, in guest configuration with ARM and technologies such as virtual machine extensions, including PowerShell desired state configuration.
Can you repeat
that? DSC.
Is that the title?
Yeah.
The address bar, I've got it full screen on my Surface and it won't fit in the address bar. It's off the end. So search engine optimization is just at its very best there. But the blog post and the series itself are very useful, especially if you're coming from a WAP experience and you want to know how some of these things translate to the Azure Stack, which is important. If you've not used WAP, then don't bother reading this.
It's as easy as the title.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. It will only take you... it's a shorter time first to read the article than the title. No, I'm kidding. And the final thing, DockerCon, we mentioned on the last episode, a conference that's recently taken place in Seattle, and I had the chance to meet with six key Docker people, Docker staff, across a broad range of topic areas. So I met with the COO and had an interview with him on the container landscape, which was really interesting. Gives a very broad view of the ecosystem, Docker's place in there, and the partnership with Microsoft. I met with an EVP of strategic strategic development. So Mariana, that was very interesting as well. She talked about the Docker Store, which wasn't actually talked about a huge amount at the conference. But Docker Store is, as you can imagine, is a more marketplace-like experience for the Docker Hub, where images and other assets are stored. Then I talked to Mike Golzer about container orchestration in 1.12, the latest release. We recapped the keynote and the demos with Patrick Chenazon, who's been on the Containers channel before, who many of you will probably know. We talked about the community, how you get involved, what are meetups and the community engagements, and how you can play a part in that. And we also talked about some of the more generic Microsoft and Docker product integration across Visual Studio, across Windows Server containers, Windows Client, and so on. So six interviews. They should be, or they will be live by the time this comes out, so you'll be able to check those out, and I'll provide the links on the Containers channel. So yeah, loads of cool stuff there. And that's my 5 minutes with a little bit extra pulled back from my Azure early finishing session.
Nice. All right.
So let's wrap up and take a look at what's been going on the Twitters. 374 followers now. That's definitely gone up from what I can remember, I think.
Like five?
Maybe, yeah. It's just
booming. Better than nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So yeah, if you know anybody who might be interested in the show, let them know. If we can still get those Techno Edge followers to come over, that would be great. So yeah, that kind of concludes what we've got. Anything else from you guys? Yeah.
Nope.
No,
I don't think so. Yeah.
You're going to remove the drilling noise, right?
There wasn't much drilling noise. So there's a lot of construction still going on, even though this wall is beautifully finished with texture. But yeah, there was a little bit of construction noise. So I'll try and edit that out with my editing skills, but who knows what will happen. But yeah, if there's nothing else, we shall leave you and join us again next time in episode 26. We are getting close to 100. We are zooming along
day by day.
Yeah, so stick with us and we'll see you again on the next episode of the Ops Team. Bye for now.